The members of the community, now led by the mystically inclined Chief Rabbi Abov, threw all caution to the wind as they abandoned themselves to joyful anticipation of the return to Jerusalem. Merchants neglected their businesses, everyday affairs were disrupted, and ordinary religious observance was suspended. Many Amsterdam Jews dropped all mundane matters and arranged immediately to travel to the Holy Land. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 144, Jerusalem versus the False Messiah. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. In a striking reflection, Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik quoted his ancestor, Rabbi Chaim of Volozhin, who imagined what would occur on the day that the Messiah finally arrived, coming when he, Rabbi Chaim, was sitting preparing for a Talmud lecture and finding, as he learned, of the arrival of the Redeemer, that a suit whose mending had been put off is all he had to wear. Here is part of what Rabbi Soloveitchik cited from Rabbi Chaim, quote, "My wife leaves for the market and I open a book and begin to learn the text at hand. Suddenly I feel the sun shining much more powerfully than it had before. What a brightness! Then I suddenly hear the birds in the garden chirping a new tune, a stirring and chanting melody, and then I hear a noise coming from the street below. I put my head out of the window and I see Ellie the cobbler running in great excitement. What is it, Ellie? What has happened to the sun's rays? How come the birds are singing so marvelously? How come the trees are suddenly blooming with new leaves? What is happening? What, Rabbi, don't you know? Says Ellie, staring at me. The Messiah has come. I immediately race to the wardrobe to get my Sabbath clothing so as to dress up and go out and greet the King, the Messiah. I take out my best suit and alas, a button is missing." End quote. For Rabbi Soloveitchik, the story of a Sabbath suit whose button had fallen off and whose mending has been delayed captured the entire nature of the Jewish eschatological faith, or as he put it, quote, "In this tale which I heard from the mouth of my father is encapsulated the whole story of the redemption. A Jew waits endlessly for redemption, and then it comes unexpectedly, and a button is missing on the suit which he has to wear to go to greet the Messiah." End quote. The story, I think, captures how Judaism combines a dedication to expressing the Jewish way of life in the everyday world with a belief in the Messiah and in all that the Bible proclaims about the redemption. At times, of course, there were false messiahs that took advantage of this Jewish faith, and one of the most famous and damaging of false messiahs appeared in the 17th century. Yet one Jewish community in a very sacred city defied this false messiah in an event which leaves a lasting legacy. We have seen how in the several hundred years after 1492, the Sephardic community was a central force in the preservation of Judaism in Jerusalem, and how their members were builders of exquisite synagogues that stand to this day in Jerusalem. For today's episode, it is worth contrasting this Sephardic community in the sacred city with that of another Sephardic community, that of the Portuguese congregation in Amsterdam, with whom is associated one of the most beautiful synagogues in the world, the edifice created in Amsterdam, known to many as the Esnoga. Let us briefly summarize the history of this community, for rightly understood, it is wondrous. After living for around 100 years as conversos, secret Jews, in Portugal, the early 1600s saw a beacon of religious freedom open in Amsterdam, and these Sephardim, at enormous sacrifice, gave up the lives they had known and took on circumcision and open Jewish observance as adults. Originally, there were three separate synagogues that united in 1639 into one, Kahal Kadosh Talmud Torah. This community brought together three rabbis, the senior spiritual leader Shaul Halevi Mortera, who was raised from birth in open religious Judaism, and two figures that began lives as conversos, Yitzchak Avoav de Fonseca and Menashe ben Israel. As Stephen Nadler describes in his wonderful book about the Amsterdam Sephardim, titled Rembrandt's Jews, this was an unusual community, and we can draw from Nadler's book several ways in which this was true. Because they had lived at the center of Portuguese society for around 100 years, these Jews had come to embrace aspects of Western culture, including art. Thus, after re-embracing Judaism in Amsterdam, these were the Jews that were patrons of artists like Rembrandt, who owned a home in their neighborhood. Whereas other Jewish communities had not yet embraced the imagery of portraiture, this aspect of aesthetic appreciation was central to the Amsterdam Sephardi way of life. And Rembrandt's pictures of these Jews give us portraits of people who look like other members of the larger Dutch world in which they found themselves. They were, in other words, acculturated members of society. But this was also an utterly unusual community in the way that its history formed its dedicated attitude to its faith. The members of this community gave up so much in order to embrace Torah life again. They embodied a sense of dedication to the Jewish past and future, a community whose story of resurrection was unlike any other on earth. We can now begin to contrast this community with the Sephardic Jews of Jerusalem, which also had a significant excommunication story in its history, one linked to an important, tragic, and incredibly damaging event. It was in the 1660s that world Jewry experienced the upheaval that was the embrace by many of the false messiah Shabtai Tzvi. A full discussion of the Shabtai Tzvi story is one to which many historians and scholars have dedicated a great deal of work, including, very famously, an enormous book by Gershom Scholem, and is beyond the scope of this discussion. But for now, let us just give some of the basics. Born in 1624, driven from his community in Smyrna in the Ottoman Empire because of his messianic pretensions and extremely controversial actions, Shabtai Tzvi eventually made his way to Jerusalem and was of assistance to the Jews of that city in seeking support for them from wealthy Jews in Egypt. After encountering a man called Nathan of Gaza, who claimed to have prophetic and eschatological visions declaring Shabtai Tzvi's messianic status, Shabtai Tzvi announced that he was the Messiah publicly to world Jewry and embraced actions forbidden according to traditional Judaism, such as the eating of chalev, the fat reserved for sacrifices and forbidden for Jews to ingest. At this time, one of the central rabbis in Jerusalem was the Sephardic sage Rabbi Yaakov Chagiz, originally from Morocco. Despite the fact that Shabtai Tzvi had helped the Jews of the city, Rabbi Chagiz joined with other Jerusalem rabbis, placed Shabtai Tzvi in excommunication, or at least threatened him with the ban, so that Shabtai Tzvi was forced to leave the sacred city. As Simon Montefiore puts it in his History of Jerusalem, quote, "Jerusalem's Jews were happy to see the back of this disruptive charlatan," end quote. In contrast to the Sephardic community of Jerusalem, many Jews throughout the world embraced Shabtai Tzvi as the Messiah, and Amsterdam was a prominent center of Sabbateanism. Stephen Nadler describes what occurred, quote, "The members of the community, now led by the mystically inclined Chief Rabbi Abov, threw all caution to the wind as they abandoned themselves to joyful anticipation of the return to Jerusalem. Merchants neglected their businesses, everyday affairs were disrupted, and ordinary religious observance was suspended. Many Amsterdam Jews dropped all mundane matters and arranged immediately to travel to the Holy Land." And Nadler adds a bit later, "The Amsterdam Jews named their sons Shabtai and Nathan. They added new prayers for the Messiah to their liturgy, introduced weekly recitations of the priestly blessing, formerly pronounced only on major festivals, and planned to exhume their dead from the cemetery in Ouderkerk to take the bodies to Palestine. Amsterdam's Jewish publishers began producing Hebrew, Spanish, and Portuguese editions of the prayer book composed by Nathan of Gaza," and Nadler concludes, "the community, in short, had lost its collective mind," end quote. One rabbi in Jerusalem, however, was skeptical of Shabtai Tzvi from the very beginning and led the opposition against the false messiah at great personal and professional cost. His name was Rabbi Yaakov Sasportas. It is here that the two communities we are discussing and their stories connect. As Princeton historian Jacob Dweck describes in his book on Rabbi Sasportas, the opposition of Jerusalem's Sephardic rabbinate to this purported messiah, in contrast to the embrace of the Jews of Amsterdam, became a major talking point for Rabbi Sasportas for this great Sephardic anti-Sabbatian. After all, Rabbi Sasportas argued, one is obligated according to the Torah to listen to a prophet. How then could the rabbis of Jerusalem defy Nathan of Gaza's purported prophecy about Shabtai Tzvi and still maintain their leadership and well-being? Yaakov Dweck writes as follows, quote, "Nathan of Gaza had received his revelation in Gaza. As word spread, the scholars of Hebron, especially those associated with the yeshiva supported by Abraham Pereira, greeted the news of Nathan's prophecy with jubilation. The reaction of scholars in Jerusalem, particularly that of Jacob Chagiz, was more subdued. They expressed skepticism and concern rather than joy and exultation. Reports of their incipient opposition reached the major centers of the Western Sephardic diaspora, and Sasportas seized upon them to challenge his colleagues in the Amsterdam rabbinate," end quote. As Yaakov Dweck further tells us, Rabbi Sasportas argued that the Bible describes the punishments of those who did not heed God's command, who did not embrace God's chosen prophets. Thus, for example, we learn of the punishment of Korach, who denied Moses' prophetic status, as well as servants of the biblical king Ahaziah, who defied the prophet Elijah. Professor Dweck writes, quote, "In these latter two examples, Moses and Elijah had confronted and condemned those who doubted their authority. By analogy, Sasportas implied, if Nathan of Gaza actually possessed the word of God, as he claimed, he had failed to condemn those very people, the sages of Jerusalem, who had doubted his mission. Sasportas seemed to say that Nathan of Gaza could not have it both ways. Either he was a genuine prophet and had to punish those who doubted the authority invested in him by God, or he was a charlatan who should keep quiet. His refusal to respond decisively to those who doubted him, as Moses and Elijah had done, was proof positive that he was not actually the prophet he claimed to be, end quote. Thus did Jerusalem's Jews become an anti-Sabbatian beacon to a Jewish world where a great many Jews had embraced the false Messiah. Then, of course, in the end of 1666, Shabtai Tzvi converted to Islam, and world Jewry in general and Amsterdam Jewry in particular realized that they had been taken in by one of the terrible con men in Jewish history. It was a tragic mistake, but in speaking of the Jews of Amsterdam, we ought to attempt to understand their mentality. This was a community that had miraculously recreated itself after a traumatic expulsion from Spain, after a forced conversion in Portugal. It saw itself as an embodiment of the defeat of the Inquisition. They chose as the symbol of their community the phoenix rising from the fire, representing how they had endured the flames of the auto da fé. And they interpreted the turbulence of their community's history as well as the resurrection reflected in their community's existence as a series of events leading to the imminent redemption. And once these Jews realized their mistake, they did not allow this disaster to destroy the Jewish life they had built in Amsterdam. Instead, as I mentioned, they created one of the most beautiful synagogues in Europe for their flourishing congregation, and they continued to dedicate themselves to the faith of their fathers. Meanwhile, the Sephardic rabbinate of Jerusalem was vindicated, with world Jewry finally recognizing the charlatan that they in Jerusalem had seen all along, and Jewish life itself would continue in Jerusalem with a dedication to sanctifying the ordinary events of every day while still maintaining faith in the biblical redemption and return that was yet to come. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.